Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here live once again in living color, getting funky like a monkey, if you will. As always, we are here. I am Chris Featherstone. Of course, we have our co-host, Derek. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well. I'm ready to get this 90 minutes of wrestling started. The new Tuesday Night Titans, Chris Featherstone, which we all know as the prestigious wrestling journalist that he is. He puts on a heck of a show. Glad to be a part of it. Always glad. 347-884-452 is the number, the magical number. Give us a call. Let us think. Let us know what you think. And argue with us. Tell us we're wrong. But odds are we're probably not. But again, you have to determine that and tell us. So please participate. We're going to have a great time tonight.
Yes, we are going to. Not necessarily talking about Raw, because we'll get to Raw in a minute. But before I go forward, I want to give a special shout-out to my family over at WeAreWrestling.net. This show, as we speak, is being streamed live on the Pancakes and the Pancakes and Power Slam Show is being streamed live. So be sure to check WeAreWrestling.net out for the latest news and the latest rumors, wrestling rumors and editorials there. They have a wrestling show of their own on Monday evenings, so be sure to check them out. Again, WeAreWrestling.net live stream right now. All right, so here's the thing. I see we're getting some people loaded here in the chat room. So here's the question. As the chat room loads, or you can also tweet live at Crave Wrestling your thoughts. The Crave Wrestling Facebook page is live right now as well. So many different variations of social media where you can let us know your thoughts. And, of course, like Derek said, if you want to call live, the number is 347-884-8452. Again, that number is 347-884-8452. And before we go forward, I want to give Derek a question before we, let the chat. You know how it usually is. Chat room gets first dibs, and then Derek says it if the chat room is not up to par with the question. So I want to start off today by asking Derek a question. Derek, this person introduces himself from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Who is that person?
Himself? Be Tyson.
Who?
Tyson Kidd.
No, this is 133 episodes in, and this is a national show. And yeah, this person says he says I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and he is a former tag team champion. He's a former ECW tag team champion.
Storm?
Just incredible. Did you say the right answer? Who?
Lance Storm.
Yes, indeed. Lance Storm. Okay. I would imagine you're already getting scrutinized.
Because, of course, you're going to think of Bret Hart, but I'm thinking, well, Bret Hart never announced himself. It was always,
right.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Saving grace.
Yeah, every time he would grab a mic and say, I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And he was a fantastic, he still is. I mean, he's semi-retired now. He had a few ROH matches in the past couple of years with Mike Bennett specifically. Speaking of ROH, before we go into Raw, I haven't really covered ROH as much as I wanted to because as Derek says, 90 minutes is never enough. So I definitely want to give ROH some love in the beginning of the show this time as opposed to saving them for the end and we run out of time. So real quick, the Honor Rumble from ROH happened this past the past weekend of television. Honor Rumble and Mike, speaking of Mike Bennett did win the Honor Rumble, so in 2 weeks he has the opportunity to go against Jay Briscoe, who just defeated Michael Elgin a few weeks ago, to get his second ROH World Championship. And there's only been one other person who's been a two-time ROH champion. And, wow, I mean, if someone knows that answer in the chat room or through Twitter, go for it. Or on We Are Streaming Live on wearewrestling.net, if someone wants to comment on the site. Or if you're over the site, and you're listening to this right now, you can definitely comment, but you can also tweet live at Crave Wrestling your answers as well. So this person is the only, other than Jay Briscoe, who just did it, this person is the only other two-time Ring of Honor champion. So that's the big question that's on the first trivia question that's on deck for now. All right. Let's get into Raw. Here we go.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Indeed. Let's get to Raw. First of all, I was not. I think that this is one of the worst Raw episodes of the entire year. I was so disappointed at Raw. I was so upset with Raw. I almost feel like talking about Impact Wrestling a little bit more than I should. We usually dab with Impact Wrestling before, you know, when we started, we would actually go further into it. But Impact Wrestling is such a dying breed that a lot of times is not even worth mentioning. But I will mention, you know, Full Metal Mayhem was amazing last week. It was the whole tag team series between Team 3D, the Hardys, and the Wolves, which I'm a big fan of the Wolves. I like their transition into TNA from ROH because, it's interestingly enough, they weren't even really a team and ROH as they got back together toward the latter part of their ROH run, because when they were the American Wolves, they were a tag team for a long time. And then, of course, they split up, and then Davey Richards started teaming with Kyle O'Reilly, and so it was towards the latter part of their ROH tenure when they got back together and actually won another tag team title. Had another tag team title run in ROH, but they really gel very well together, and they have one of the best theme songs in TNA right now. I definitely give that to them, and they did a really good job going toe to toe with Team 3D and the Hardys recently. The series of matches they've had on Impact Wrestling has been really the lifeblood, or really the saving grace of Impact Wrestling the past few weeks, especially after this week's partnership with WrestleOne. You have your biggest pay-per-view of the year, Bound for Glory, in Japan, which is fine. That's not the big issue. It was in Tokyo, Japan. You know, the market from TNA, I'd imagine, isn't as strong as the States. If anything, it should be in the UK, because every time they go in the UK, it's very amazing crowds every time they have their UK tours. So if any place overseas from the United States, they should have had it. Should have been in the UK if they want to have impressive looking crowds for their biggest pay per view of the year. The crowd and I saw some photos, you know, outside of, you know, the pay-per-view being aired. Actually, it's like $40 on the YouTube channel, which is weird, seeing how the spoilers were already out. And the tag team champions weren't there. And the world heavyweight champion wasn't there. So it was all in all, you know, from a solid pay-per-view as far as wrestling is concerned, but there were hardly any builds. The main event was the great Muta and Tajiri. Mind you, Tajiri just recently turned heel in WrestleOne, so everything's a big delay in TNA. They went against Sonata, the great Sonata, and James Storm, and that was the main event. So it was a horrible thought, and Dixie Carter even tweeted saying that she wasn't even there. So she wasn't there, and of course the announcers weren't there. They were dubbing the pay-per-view live. So it was all bad. The whole concept of having a taped pay-per-view, being your biggest pay-per-view of the year, have it taped, is just, I mean, you're doomed to fail. It's absolutely ridiculous, and I was just so upset with even the thought of that. So that's my rant on Impact Wrestling for this week and also covering ROH. So first we have, well, as far as Raw is concerned, we have actually not even, it's not as good, it's not even better. It's just as bad almost as this week in wrestling as far as TNA is concerned and their pay-per-view. Raw was horrible to me, and I'm the one throughout the weeks that tries my best to be neutral as far as, or I guess optimistic when it comes to Raw programming, but Brock Lesnar being away from WWE television is not bad, but the problem with that is, it's showing how vulnerable the WWE programming is, period. And it's really, it could allow, and I've said this many times, as far as the mid-card, it could allow the mid-card to shine, but it hasn't really allowed the mid-card to shine. And once we get to Damian Mizdow, I'm writing an article right now for the Bleacher Report on that, and we'll talk about how my fantasy booking, so to speak, of Damian Sandow from now to WrestleMania when we get to that part on Raw. But to start, it's just, I'm just so disappointed with what I'm seeing leading into Hell in a Cell. Very, very disappointed. And it's showing, without a champion, it's showing how vulnerable the product is and just I'm trying to be optimistic, but it's very tough. So we'll start with Dean Ambrose with an in-ring promo. John Cena appears, and then Triple H and Stephanie appears on stage, books a triple threat match of the Usos versus Golden Stardust versus Cena and Ambrose. And, of course, Cena and Ambrose beats the current champions and the former tag team champions. So, I mean, I can understand this is kind of like when Shawn Michaels and John Cena, before they had their match at WrestleMania, they were going back and forth and even won the tag team titles for a hiccup. But I just wasn't impressed at all. For you to come out and you're having issues with each other and you beat the current World Tag Team Champions and the former World Tag Team Champions, I think we should see a little bit better as far as prestige is concerned with that title. I'd rather for them to beat, you know, they could have fought like Slater Gator or something like that. You know, it just didn't make any sense to beat. You're a one-day makeshift team, and you beat the current champions and the former champions. Logic is just totally out the window to me.
For me, they're just that good. Yeah. Raw was such a sleeper last night, and it's kind of weird to say that with how much wrestling, in-ring wrestling, you actually had, opposed to people walking in and blowing smoke and doing whatever. But yeah, the whole thing was just so poorly put together, and it's almost like you want to say, well, the in-ring talent did the most they could with what they were given, almost. But does that justify the horrible, the writing and everything was just so bad and so awful. Throughout the whole, every match, there was something wrong with it. But even though they had matches that lasted typically a lot longer than they usually do on Raw, and again, there was good in-ring talent, but the whole, I don't know, it's just such a weird, the whole, around the pay-per-view match angle. I knew, even going into, it was 11 o'clock and the Authority was still walking down, you know, this is only going to last a few minutes. It did, we'll get to that. But it was just such a, you got to be kidding me, type of moment. It was a sleeper Raw. It was so boring.
Yeah, it was very, very boring. Leading into your hell. I mean, and the thing is, it even dilutes the Hell in a Cell, period. I mean, oh, man. I just couldn't say enough bad stuff about this Raw. And for those who listen to the Pancakes and Power Slam show on a weekly basis, I mean, you know that I have my problems with the Raw product right now, but I try to be as optimistic as I can, but I have nothing good to say other than maybe one or two things, and we'll get to them here soon. Then we get Stephanie and Triple H coming back out, scheduling a contract on a pole match for tonight, which was originally scheduled for the actual pay-per-view, which makes sense. I was totally okay with this because the reason why it's been reported, the reason why they abruptly changed the match from then to now was because they didn't want to, as far as promotion is concerned, they didn't want to have kind of like a contingency match, so to speak. It's better to have a match in concrete rather than, have some type of, if this person wins and that person goes there, and it makes sense from a promotional standpoint. I agreed with the decision. But then we get AJ and Layla defeating Paige and AJ Fox. First of all, she's an established heel. I mean, that's who she is. Her and Summer Rae are a heel, a duo. But AJ Lee's going through this revolving door of, partners because she's a loner and Paige has a new BFF. Please give me a different storyline than this. It's unimpressive. It's not exciting at all. And how long is this partner thing going to go?
I hope it doesn't go more than 2 minutes. I mean, really. They're making it stupid, childish garbage. It's not interesting. It's they're better than this. The Divas, AJ and Paige at least, are better than what they're being made to do. And it's disappointing. It makes a bad product. And it was just another reason why Raw was just an absolute atrocity last night. I mean, this didn't help it. The Divas usually don't help it, but this just really, this was just an extra low. Monday Night Football was on last night, and it seemed kind of good.
Yeah. Indeed. Next we have Orton defeating Ziggler. Now, let's talk about SmackDown 15 for a second. SmackDown 15 had a promising beginning of the show because I got to see my boy Young Thaddeus, as King Booker would say. I'm a big Tae Long fan, probably because I'm a traditionalist and I remember him as, you know, refereeing matches between George South and Tully Blanchard back, you know, in like 86, 87 in NWA. So, I mean, I've always liked, there's been times as a manager when he was a heel manager that I didn't like him, but just all in all, I'm just a big fan of Tae Long just because he is the quintessential person who's really paid their dues in the wrestling business. If there was even a possibility for him to gain even more respect from me, he did when I looked at the I've watched all the Legends of Wrestling series when the WWE 24/7 was still around, and he was on there a time or so, and he was talking about just, you know, when he started in the business, how he was, you know, putting up rings, and then, you know, he went from just putting up rings to refereeing, and then he was managing for a while, and then, of course, he, you know, was general manager on SmackDown for 6 years, and I love the fact that he is just really the epitome of someone who's paid their dues in the business, and I respect the heck out of Teddy Long, and it's good to see my boy John Laurinaitis. He's back. Well, at least he was back for a little bit, and it was funny to see both of them. But back to the point, Dolph Ziggler, has had some type of resurrection of the Intercontinental Championship or resurgence. I guess resurgence is the better word as far as his context is concerned. And he had a resurgence of the championship, but he's falling victim of the IC title curse again. I mean, you'll see this coming SmackDown. On Raw, he lost. SmackDown, last time he lost to Rusev on SmackDown 15. And it's just really sad that they're just having him lose cleanly. And he lost against Randy Orton. It was a good match, but he's the Intercontinental Champion. And he, just like Barrett, just like, well, Bad News Barrett, not so much because, you know, he was abruptly injured. But, I mean, just the Miz, Kofi Kingston, Curtis Axel, you name it, just the long list of people who's been stricken by the Intercontinental title curse. It seems like Dolph Ziggler has been stricken again by just losing matches as the mid-card champ. It just makes no sense to me how the mid-card champ is losing a string of non-title matches. How does that bring up the prestige of the Intercontinental Championship when you're losing a string of matches, for one, and for two, this is the perfect time to showcase the mid-card championships, and what do? You have a Hell in a Cell that has so much to be desired, and you have someone who is a really good Intercontinental Champion, but unfortunately, the WWE creative is not taking advantage of what they have right now. Just absolutely horrible.
It is a bad rap, and you look through the history, and like we've said so many times, the IC Championship used to be something. I mean, it was the next step. You know, 8 out of 10 times. And now it's just, it's another, it's a gimmick, it's a joke. No one really cares. Dolph Ziggler can definitely do it, and why can't they see that? Whenever he's out there, everyone chants, this is awesome. He can make a match. I mean, he's like a young Jericho, like a young, let's say, Michaels, but, I mean, he's somebody that can get people on their feet and really get them into the match. I mean, the guy is spontaneous. He's the perfect person for that belt, and yet they have him lose to everybody. And I can, you know, see him losing to Orton, but not losing to everyone else that he's lost to, just building up to an Intercontinental Champion that can't defend his title when it's not on the line, but he can't win.
Yeah, it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. 347-884-8452 is the number to call. The question on live right now is, who is the only, other than Jay Briscoe, who just became a two-time Ring of Honor champion, who is the only other two-time Ring of Honor champion? The only other two-time Ring of Honor champion. All right, let's get into the next match, which is Rollins. Well, and the thing is, Rollins one-upped Randy Orton. It was kind of a game of one-up between Orton and Rollins throughout the night. But it was just absolutely horrible to me. But you have Orton defeating Ziggler, Rollins coming out and curb stomping Ziggler, which makes it even worse. And then you have Rollins defeating Swagger and Orton coming out and RKOing Swagger. Now, I understand the one-ups, whatever, but you have Jack Swagger's another case. He had an opportunity. What is the whole point of Zeb Coulter being in the WWE now? There's absolutely no point of Zeb Coulter even being a part of the WWE, because the We the People chant is still resounding. Jack Swagger still is a over a little bit as a face, but his heel run was just not good. His face run had potential, but he was just a rung in the Rusev ladder, so to speak. And he had an opportunity. I mean, even with that, the Bo Dallas thing, and he has an opportunity to become a really solid babyface. But it's like you have the WWE creative writing for the purposes of Cena, Ambrose, Rollins, and Orton, so to speak. Just those four are really the only focal points of their writing. And it's absolutely horrible to me. Swagger could be a legitimate mid-card contender right now, flat out, period. There could be a 3- or 4-way match. I really think, instead of saying, you know, it looks like we're going to get another John Cena versus Randy Orton main event, Randy Orton comes saying main event, and because I definitely don't think that Ambrose and Rollins will be the last match of the show, we'll get John Cena versus Randy Orton again. Just absolutely horrible. And why can't you have a mid-card match be the last match of the card? Why not have that? You could build it up so much. You can have Swagger. You can have a 4- or 5-man Hell in a Cell match for the U.S. Championship. You can have Rusev in it. You can have Show in it. You can have Sheamus in it. You can have Cesaro in it, or Miz even. You can have him in that. And you can have five people in Swagger. You can have there's a solid five-person. There's a solid five people that could have main evented for the U.S. title on Hell in a Cell and would have just blown away any other match than what is potentially going to happen.
Well, it's not going to happen, of course. Swagger and Rollins, again, they can do a lot, but yeah, they only write for the same people over and over again. And they don't focus on anything. But again, all those people are tied in to Triple H somehow, seems. So they just he's just focusing on that. And I've been reading a lot where Triple H is taking over. He's running the ship now for the most part. But it seems like he's almost in the same mindset as Vince McMahon was. He just focuses on a few people, and the rest of them just kind of go wayside. Once in a while, you'll see somebody work their way up to the ranks of the big status, but then there's just nothing. The boring pay-per-views, another thing. If I see Cena and Orton one more time, I'm going to puke. And that's exactly what we're going to see, and they were going to put it on a pay-per-view?
Yeah.
No. I'm not going to pay for that. I don't know who would. And just, the Hell in the Cell, the whole build-up, just period, isn't up to snuff. And again, it's not that the talent isn't where it should be. They can do a lot with it, but just the writing all around it, the events coming up to it, is just a mockery of anything. And it's almost like this whole last few weeks of wrestling just going to be wiped from the record books and say start over again.
Yeah. We need a reset. We need a reset really fast. We need Royal Rumble to come faster than a speeding bullet, and it's just absolutely horrible. Looks like I've stumped the live stream at We Are Wrestling and the Twitter world and the chat room and the Crave Wrestling on Facebook. The other only two-time ROH champions, Austin Aries, all for those ROH fans. Austin Aries. Next question here. What did the SD stand for in SD Jones? You can't say it. You can't say it, Derek. What did the SD stand for in SD Jones? Again, what did the SD stand for in SD Jones?
Well, you didn't ask me the last question, technically. You asked Crave Wrestling Universe in the chat room, in the phone lines, but you didn't say, hey, Derek, it was the second... There's the other RX one, too, so am I allowed to answer than this one? Special delivery.
Nope. I did not. No, not yet, at least. Not yet. All right, what did the SD stand for in SD Jones? All right, next we have Rusev against the Big Show. We had it was a pretty decent match. I will say this. This is one of the few things that I liked about Raw. It was a pretty decent match. I tell you, man, and I've said this before. I think Rusev is the purest heel in the WWE, and I'm definitely going to write an article about that. No lie, he is the purest heel, and this is what I mean by purest heel. When you have someone who is a really traditional heel, an Andre the Giant-style heel, that no one likes him. He's just a villain. He's a bad guy. No one likes him. And especially with this new breed of, internet wrestling community, with the Smark Nation, with just the casual fans being less and less when it comes to professional wrestling, I think having a pure heel is really hard to come by, because a lot of times the heels are the faces. Bo Dallas have had cheers before. You have, of course, Seth Rollins getting cheered by many people. And there's not many heels, there's hardly any heels that gets unanimously booed. And that is the quintessential pure heel, someone who gets booed, someone like a Nikita Koloff, and I'm just thinking about that. I really think that Rusev could be, and he's already getting to that state as far as being like Nikita Koloff was in the NWA, and Koloff had the U.S. Championship, so wouldn't it be so, 20 years later, just about, wouldn't it be so fitting for Rusev to win the United States Championship? Instead of having Rusev feud with these random people like Big Show and Mark Henry and Jack Swagger, why don't you just have him win the United States Championship? You could have easily, like I said, you could have easily had five men to main event Hell in a Cell, especially if there's reports of John Cena and Rusev going against each other at at WrestleMania. This is the perfect time to really build Rusev up as a mid-card wrestler. Put his name in, you know, one of five people to be the main event for the U.S. title, and that would be a perfect time to not make Sheamus, you know, succumb to the Rusev crush and singles action. But there's five, you know, there's five men, and you have a really good Hell in a Cell main event. That would be something I'd pay for, but unfortunately, we're not going to have that. And instead, we're having Big Show and Rusev at Hell in a Cell, which Rusev, of course, is going to win. But him winning the main event for the U.S. title in the Hell in a Cell is much more marketable and meaningful than defeating the Big Show in a singles match. That we're going to see that at Hell in a Cell. And as far as Raw is concerned, I don't know, man. I don't know, Derek. We kind of seeing a Mark Henry heel turn tease, because Mark Henry interfered with the match, and I don't know. I think we might get a turn come Hell in a Cell.
I thought it was going to happen last night, to be honest. I could almost see Mark Henry coming
like
out
it.
And bashing it, and then he just blasts the Big Show for jealousy because he couldn't get the job done, and evidently Big Show hasn't either. Maybe Mark Henry was trying to stop that. So, yeah, I can see that, but who's interested in it, really? Not me. I'd rather see Big Show just, you know, have his way with Rusev, but then they got to throw in little Mark Henry. But, yeah, I can see that, and I'd love the idea of Rusev going against Cena or, you know, something. And, again, that'd be great for WrestleMania. I'd puke if it was Brock and Cena, which has been rumored a little bit, but, you know, just go see. No one knows what's going to happen. That's another 6 months from now, but, yeah. Totally agree. At the match last night, I was wanting to see Henry turn just to kind of make me open my eyes a little bit. I mean, really, that was, you know, just, I was hoping for that much, not for him to walk away looking like Batman and Robin.
Yeah, pretty much. Good job to the WeAreWrestling.net comment board. Special delivery is the correct answer. Also, real quick, a comment here says, I don't hate Rusev, I just don't care. Probably because I think he's a good wrestler and don't care for his 1980s character. Thank you for commenting, but I like the 80s character, though. That's the thing about Rusev. I think we're getting that pure heel, Nikita Koloff-esque character that pro wrestling needs. I mean, there's so much gray area in pro wrestling these days that a heel's a face and a face is a heel. And I mean, the battle between good and evil, I believe, still should remain, because if you have a bunch of tweeners, you really don't have someone that everybody roots for and someone that everybody doesn't. When Flair was a heel, he was cocky. He had some, you know, when he was limousine riding and wearing the most expensive suits and wearing, you know, and the big most expensive shades. You know, he had people who liked him, but he was villainous, and he was very, very villainous, and he was a huge heel, and he had pure heels supporting him. He had Wyndham supporting him. He had Anderson supporting him. You want to talk about a pure heel? Ole Anderson was a pure heel. People did not like Ole Anderson. Even in real life, people didn't like Ole Anderson. So he was definitely had that pure heel feel to him. And I think, I mean, Ole Anderson is a good comparison to Rusev as well, because I really think that he has a type of ruggedness that Ole Anderson had as well. So Ole Anderson mixed with Nikita Koloff, I think that's my best assessment for Rusev so far. So next question is, WCW was sold to Ted Turner as NWA. Who owned that NWA territory before it was sold to Ted Turner, who owned that NWA territory before it was sold to Ted Turner. Next we have... No, I think the people over at RealWrestling.net is... I think we got some smart people in our hands as far as wrestling trivia is concerned. So the question is out right now, live. Again, who owned the territory before it was sold to see? There you go. WeAreWrestling.net. Jim Crockett was indeed the correct answer. Great job. Next, we have Miz defeating Sheamus. I am going to spend my time talking about how much one of my favorite wrestlers right now is none other than Damian Mizdow. Not because of his win-loss streak, because I like doing a lot of research when it comes to wrestling is concerned when I write my articles. And Damian Sandow has won three singles matches the entire year. He's won four matches the entire year, one as a tag team match again when he was Mizdow and The Miz, when he was teaming with The Miz. He won a tag team match. But in singles competition, he's won three matches the entire year, and we're only a month and a half before the year's over. And that's ridiculous to me. Well, 2.5 months. And it's ridiculous to me how Sandow, whatever you want to call him, his win-loss record is just ridiculous. But he is such an amazing person. Foley said it a few weeks ago that he is one of the most must-see people to watch on Raw in the WWE. And I was like, yeah, I can see. But now, I totally, totally agree. Just from the mockery of the holds, the mockery of the reactions towards when he's getting kicked or punched, and of course, you know, he has the mannerisms every time he would point, when he would spin, every time he would do the face, the moneymaker pose, he would mock all of those. But a couple weeks ago when he was outside and took his robe off as if he was wrestling inside the ring and started mocking that sold it. That completely sold it to me. I think that, and this is real quick, I'm gonna book Damian Mizdow from now to Mania. So you have Mizdow, he's getting the support unanimously almost of the WWE Universe. And eventually, The Miz, he becomes so popular that The Miz becomes jealous. And I would give Miz the Intercontinental Championship, especially now since they're just dogging Ziggler. I would give him the Intercontinental Championship probably within the next few weeks or a month or so. I would have The Miz keep the title, or maybe even lose it and gain it again from some random face, maybe a Swagger or something like that. And I would have Damian Mizdow keep, you know, mocking the mannerisms, keep mocking the holds and the moves. And he becomes so popular amongst the fans that The Miz starts to see this and starts to get very jealous and starts to put him in matches that he was supposed to be in, starts to, you know, be physical with him, starts to push him around. And I would say probably around Elimination Chamber time, Damian Mizdow starts to pick up on the abuse that he's getting from The Miz. And at this time, The Miz is Intercontinental Champion. And finally, Damian Sandow steps up and says, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of being your stunt double. I'm my own man now. And there you go. WrestleMania 31, Damian Mizdow versus The Miz. And there you have it. Mizdow's moment is at WrestleMania 31. That's my booking.
That's a good analogy, and yeah, everybody can see that happening. the thing about Mizdow right now, like you stated earlier, he's interesting. He's fun to watch. He's a character. I mean, he's really, for what they've given him, he deserves everything that the WWE has to offer. Being bottom of the barrel, just an absolute disgrace. And then they pair him up with Miz, and all of a sudden, he's this new magical character. You go to see the Miz now to go see Sandow, and they're going to play on that. If they're smart, they're going to play on that, if they're smart. And, yet again, you said it to a T. That's exactly what you can see happening. I hope they don't blow it. I hope they don't make it a Raw main event or something, just trying to push it aside.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to doing
impersonation.
But no, it could be something absolutely wonderful. That was probably one of the highlights of Raw. I sat up and, this is funny. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every minute of it. Sandow was a better Miz than the Miz. So, I'm so ready to see where this is going to go. Again, that was a highlight of Raw. And that shouldn't be saying much, but, he knocked it out of the park. He really knows what he's doing with this gimmick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you hit it right on the head. I really hope that they just don't make this some ridiculous, Raw main event or Raw mid-card 10 o'clock spot. I really hope they don't do that, because Mizdow is really working with what they've given him. Even with his win-loss record, he's still very popular. And I really hope they don't do something like that. It would be absolutely ridiculous to see them blow this amazing meteoric rise of Damian Mizdow. It's something that people were annoyed by in the beginning, but people are really getting behind, and he's over. He's over as a character. Just like you said, when The Miz comes out, I don't care about The Miz. When The Miz comes out, I'm looking to chuckle. Every time that comes out, I chuckle because it's absolutely hilarious. And Damian Mizdow is the talk of the night when it comes to, The Miz, anything involving The Miz. Next question is, this Armstrong brother had the Russian leg sweep as his finisher. This Armstrong brother had the Russian leg sweep as his finisher. And of course, the family over at RearWrestling.net is doing a fantastic job answering the questions. Also, Twitter, follow at Crave Wrestling on Twitter. So I think that, Derek, you may not be having to answer any questions because we have a good batch of people who knows their wrestling this week.
Yeah,
and
that's
now,
great.
It is. It's great. Miz defeating Sheamus by countout because of Mizdow. But here's the sad part. Then we get some type of NeNe Leakes promotion for this ridiculous moment in Raw. NeNe Leakes meet Total Divas, and of course, from what I'm seeing in every week on Raw, everybody has to have their Total Divas moment. So it's really, really sad that we're getting that. It's really, really sad that this Total Divas has to be shown every week. I understand with the whole E! Partnership. I get it. But Brie Bella, Naomi, and Natalya defeats Nikki Bella, Summer Rae, and Cameron. Whoop-de-doo. But what's even crazier about that is that now we're going to get a Hell in a Cell match between Brie and Nikki, and the loser has to be the other's personal assistant? Are you kidding me? Absolutely ridiculous, and I have no idea why they would continue to just drive that down our throats. It's just absolutely ridiculous to me.
They're just trying to do whatever they can with the Divas, and it's just they've got nothing else with the Divas. So they're going to try to push the show and bring things in, and even the show's just I don't know. It's like talking about even TNA's more exciting. So the Divas are the Divas. It's so hard to really sit as a wrestling fan and watch it and call it entertainment, because it's just, I don't know anybody that enjoys it. I really don't.
Well, I would imagine some people, as far as like, I think the female demographic may enjoy Total Divas, yeah, which I can
see
why.
Well, wrestling fans
can
see that. Make it interesting. Make us, the wrestling fans, want to see it. That's who you're catering to. Please.
Yep, I totally agree. Totally agree. Interesting comments on WeAreWrestling.net, because the E hates us all. That's the reason why Total Divas exists, as far as being a especially a late spot on Raw. Just ridiculousness. Absolutely ridiculousness. We got an incorrect answer so far on the current trivia question, which is, this Armstrong brother had the Russian leg sweep as his finisher. Next, we have Dean Ambrose, your boy, who you wrestled with before. Dean Ambrose defeating John Cena on a contract on a pole match. And you know what's so funny about this? It's like, of course you didn't want to make John Cena just flat out lose a match, because you want to protect John Cena's character. Is that even necessary? And I've said this before on the show. John Cena can lose the next 10 matches, and it wouldn't make a difference at all. It wouldn't make a difference at all for his character, period. He can lose the next 15 matches, and it wouldn't take away how much the WWE has protected the John Cena character the past 12 years. It's incredible. And of course, they had to protect the John Cena character even more by having Kane and Rollins and Orton come out and, you know, mess up the match, and then then Ambrose kind of squirmy his way over and pick up the money in the bank or the contract, the Hell in a Cell contract. I can see from a protecting John Cena standpoint. Yeah, it makes sense. But what's the need? Why is it necessary to protect John Cena's character, and you've done it for 12 years? There's nothing else to protect. Have Ambrose win the match without any type of interference. Now is the time to really push people like, if you're going to push people like Ambrose, if you're going to, you know, make people like Ambrose and Rollins the new faces of the company, why have him have a tainted contract win? It just makes absolutely no sense to me.
It was fun on Ambrose's part, I believe, because, you know, he got the contract and did the little you can't see me. It was good for him. For Cena, okay, yeah, I understand that. Cena's still trying to show his baby face side, even though they want to try to go heel, and he kind of, like, shrugged his shoulders and said, yep, you got me. Even though the whole thing was just total schmoz, it was disgusting. And, of course, I mean, again, it just killed it when the authority's still coming down to the ring and it's already past 11 o'clock. This isn't going to be anything. You built all this up for nothing, and that's exactly almost what you got. And, I mean, that's sad to say. I mean, I'm glad Ambrose got the main event on Raw, and, you know, he can skip the likes of Cena, and Cena being involved in the authority. I mean, it all made sense. It was just, they could have made a little more out of it than what it was, and again, it was just kind of it was nothing. It was just a slated showcase of absolute garbage, and it could have been so much more if they really would have pumped it a little more, but instead they decided, let's make this last match. Let it last 3 minutes. Supposed to be a huge main event.
Yeah.
After the end of the night, you're like,
yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just protecting John Cena's character is the WWE way. Absolutely no sense. For the week this week, and for all of the new listeners here, we have a weekly Flavor of the Week just a random discussion topic called the Flavor of the Week. And the past few weeks we have been dealing with a series of notable, some of the most notable Hell in a Cell matches. And we've talked about, of course, Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker back in Bad Blood in 97. We talked about Shawn Michaels and Triple H, Bad Blood in 2004. And today we're going to talk about Cactus Jack and Triple H from No Way Out of 2000. So let us know your comments about that when we go to Flavor of the Week. And now we're going to talk about SmackDown. We're going to talk about SmackDown 15. I was really excited about SmackDown 15. You know, there were reports of a lot of old names coming in and a lot of just random people just showing up. And I was absolutely disappointed. So we're going to talk about SmackDown coming up. But in the meantime, let's take a brief pause.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, hosted by Chris Featherstone and Derek of Crave Wrestling. This is the new Tuesday Night Titans.
SmackDown 15 starts off with the Stephanie McMahon in-ring promo. Now, here's the thing with Stephanie McMahon. I think Stephanie McMahon is hilarious, by the way. When she kind of breaks out of authority kayfabe, I think she's absolutely hilarious. The whole dancing when she was singing Na 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 with Vicky Guerrero, I think that was absolutely hilarious. When she was dancing when they were bribing John Cena about the being on the cover of 2K14, I think that was absolutely hilarious too. When she was doing a little dance, I call it Club Steph. And we saw that on SmackDown when, of course, you had John Laurinaitis and Teddy Long. And it was, again, it was amazing to see Teddy Long. And six-man tag team matches, him and his many six-man tag team matches that he's booked over the past, you know, six-plus years as SmackDown GM or assistant GM. Absolutely hilarious. And somehow he gets a 15-man tag team match out of all that because he involves the Gator and El Torito. So that was absolutely funny. It was also, like I said, it was good to see John Laurinaitis back for two simple words, people power. Your boy John Laurinaitis. And we've had many people on the Pancakes and Power Slam show that were former WWE wrestlers, and they had they had their specific words to say about John Laurinaitis. We had Carlito on the show a couple of weeks ago. He didn't say much. He didn't say many bad things about Laurinaitis, but we had some other people on the show the past 132 episodes, soon to be 133 episodes. We've had enough people to say, Laurinaitis isn't one on my favorites list, so to speak. So, but as a character, the guy is absolutely funny, and I have some close friends who are big Laurinaitis fans, and I think he's funny too. What's your take on Laurinaitis?
I like him. I mean, he's a clean cut. He's like your average, ordinary business guy, you know, somebody that just comes out and does what the man tells him to do. Kind of makes it seem like he really knows what's best for business, even though he's kind of almost like a patsy. Kind of seems like, kind of reminds me of, I don't know, I don't want to compare him to like Michael Scott from The Office, but just kind of really, just, I like him. I like the character. His voice kind of got on my nerves at times. But, I mean, the Laurinaitis family is synonymous with wrestling and Ohio State football. And I just, I liked them. I enjoyed the time he was there. I mean, he's a good character. He wasn't my favorite, and, you know, I can't really say that I missed him, but it was good to see him again, along with Teddy Long. And it was a SmackDown that I don't usually watch SmackDown a whole lot. I sometimes miss it with my schedule. But the atmosphere was good, but, yeah, the show just didn't deliver. And Laurinaitis, bless his heart, he was there. It was fun to see him again. It really was. So, I mean, I can't say. It was a good moment.
Yeah, and Derek will hopefully clear out his schedule a little bit more so we can get back on the SmackDown commentary because we need to spend a little bit more time on SmackDown. Speaking of SmackDown, real quick, I totally loathe how SmackDown is not its own identity anymore. And it's amazing how, you know, there was a lot of clips on SmackDown 15. Other than Teddy Long and John Laurinaitis, there was not anyone outside of those two that stepped in that ring that was outside of who we see every week, whether it be Raw or SmackDown or main event or whatever. We see all those people every week. So it wasn't exciting. It wasn't as exciting as it could have been. And you give us 2 hours of just the scraps of Raw. That's basically what we get on SmackDown. We get the scraps of Raw. And, of course, you know, the brand split, when the split was around, a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people liked it. Personally, I was a big fan of the split. I think the split was very necessary. It really revived characters. It really made characters popular. And it really made SmackDown its own separate brand, its own identity. And when they started having two world champions, too, I think that was amazing. I absolutely loved it because you have a lot of people who are vying for nothing, really. I mean, you have a core four, a core maybe three people that's in contingency right now. You know, this past year, who were the, and it's been almost a year since they've unified the WWE and World Heavyweight Championship. They did it last December. So you had Orton win it in December. Orton kept it until WrestleMania, so he kept it until April. Daniel Bryan won, and he kept it until Money in the Bank, so it was 3 months because Money in the Bank, he had to forfeit it. So Money in the Bank, Cena wins it again, and Cena keeps it only for a month with Lesnar. So you've had four different WWE World Heavyweight Champions this year in 10 months, almost 10 months. And those four in maybe, that's really it. I mean, those really are the only four people that are legitimate contenders right now and will be for a while for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And you can't really, returns don't really mean anything anymore. Like, for instance, people will mark out when Ryback returns. It's just, it's something that's going to happen. You usually get that I miss you pop, even if you're a heel. You get it. I mean, it happens all the time. When Triple H tore his quad, he was with Austin with the two-man power trip back in 2001. So, and he was one of the biggest heels in the entire WWE. And when he was gone for that 9 months, he had the rehab and people missed the Triple H character, although he was a huge heel. It's crazy because he came back on that Raw, the Raw in January 2002, people marked out, and he was a face just by default. And it was a de facto baby face, basically. And people are going to, I think Ryback's going to get that, he's going to get a I miss you pop as well. Usually it happens when, and I know for a fact that Wade Barrett's going to get that pop. When Barrett comes back, he's totally going to get that pop. So, I mean, that's really how it is. You're going to get that type of reaction when you, even if you're a heel. So, but the problem with it now is when Ryback comes back, what happens? Nothing. There's no title to vie for. Ryback isn't going to come back and vie for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Now, if there was a standalone World Heavyweight Championship that still existed, Ryback's return would mean a lot more. But unfortunately, with there's no split, and now SmackDown's just Raw with, you know, the scraps of Raw, and you only have one title now. People like Ziggler, people like, you know, Ryback, who really could be legitimate contenders for the World Heavyweight Championship. Yeah, unfortunately, when they come back, it's not going to mean anything.
No, it won't mean anything. And, I mean, that's just the way it is. That's how it, I mean, they get that cheer pop like Batista did. I mean, that's probably the most recent that I can remember where, you know, he's gone for so long, comes back, everyone loves him, and then just the next week, he's boring. No one cared. And nobody really wanted him there. And when he disappeared again, it's like not that big of a deal. When he comes back, it might be a bigger deal because he's Mr. Hollywood now. But I totally get what you're saying about that. You just don't. They don't have the it factor yet. It's not. They get hurt. They go away. They come back. They're relevant for a couple weeks, and again, they just kind of fall into the cracks, and they are who they are. They become stagnant. And everything still focuses on Cena, Orton, and Daniel Bryan if he comes back, Ambrose. Big deal. Let him have their time, but they're not going to last very long.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, I mean, people, somebody like Ryback, man, I mean, if the... They just it's so clear that the mid-card championships don't mean it still doesn't mean nothing even with the unification of the world titles, that it just seems as if that would be so perfect for the mid-card championships to mean something, but it doesn't mean anything still. I mean, Sheamus revived the title when he won it in May from Dean Ambrose. Well, when he won it in the Rumble, the Battle Royal, I think that Sheamus did a really good job with reviving, you know, the U.S. title, with making it very competitive. His two matches at Payback and Night of Champions against Cesaro were easily match of the year candidates. Fantastic matches, but it's really sad for me to see. Still, how the U.S. title, who has a little bit more meaning right now than Intercontinental Championship, sadly, it just doesn't mean anything. It's really, really, really sad. And I really think that the WWE may want to consider bringing back the World Heavyweight Championship. I mean, you know, never say never. I think it'd be really good if you had, like, for instance, if you had Jack Swagger, who could be a very solid babyface. He's never been baby, other than this first run that he's had. He's never been babyface. Now he has Zeb Coulter still. The We the People chant still matters. But it proves it doesn't mean anything anymore. If the World Heavyweight Championship was still around, he could be vying for the World Heavyweight Championship. He'll be over. The people chants are still matter. And there you are. But it's really unfortunate. How unfortunate is it? It's unfortunate that the next match on SmackDown was Kane versus Adam Rose. That pretty much says it all. I keep saying this. I keep saying this. I'm an Adam Rose fan because my son's an Adam Rose fan. And my son, my little boy is 2 years old, and I like him because him. But I don't know, man. I might have to tell little Elijah that I might have to let go of Adam Rose because this guy is becoming more and more irrelevant. He should really stay in NXT. He was really, really over in NXT. And by the way, NXT has been absolutely amazing. Absolutely, I absolutely love watching NXT every week. With Hideo Itami, a.k.a. Kenta, with his feud with The Ascension. The Ascension should come up, they're reported to come up on the WWE main roster here soon, so that should be interesting. But I really think that that title needs to be back, and I really think that Adam Rose, oh man, I mean he should really stay in NXT. I don't know, Derek. I'm almost at my last leg with liking Adam Rose, man.
I can totally see that. I mean, he's got almost what you'd call the Fandango curse. But again, Fandango had a lot better moments than Adam Rose. But yeah, he's getting stale. And he's somebody that's
right. What better moments did Adam would Fandango have than Adam Rose, other than beating Chris Jericho, which absolutely did not matter at all because he lost at Extreme Rules the next month and just... It didn't mean absolutely anything.
It was his WrestleMania moment. And he's a great wrestler. But, and he's very articulate. I can go on. But anyway, so yeah, the Adam Rose, I mean, that's a shame for him. Too bad. I still kind of enjoy it. I never hated it outright. But it's losing its steam and it's almost irrelevant.
We got a correct answer of the previous question. What Armstrong brother had a wrestling leg sweep as finisher? Brad Armstrong is the correct answer. Great job. Next question is, what was Taka Michinoku's finisher named? What was Taka Michinoku's finisher named? All right, and I, like I said, I agree with you, with Adam Rose, sadly. AJ Lee defeats Alicia Fox. Seth Rollins defeats Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston. Where do you see Kofi Kingston in the next six months?
Next 6 months, I probably see him out of a job. Man, that kind of stinks because, I mean, obviously he's had a pretty decent career in WWE. I mean, he's had titles, Intercontinental title, and as of recently, I mean, he was really impressive in a battle royal not too long ago. I'm trying to name the pay-per-view, slipped my mind. But, I mean, the guy's impressive. I mean, he can move. Just they have no faith or anything in him. So, I mean, that's a shame, but I don't see him. You don't see him on WWE TV much. At least you don't see him on Raw, which is almost the only one that matters other than SmackDown. Yeah, I don't see much of him anymore. When was the last time he was on TV? It's been a while. 3 or 4 weeks at least.
Kofi was on SmackDown.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, 347-452. Evidently,
he's
though,
had
he hasn't
some,
been a
Yeah, he's not on Raw much, but he's on Main Event and sometimes on SmackDown, but... They're going back and forth with what they want to do with this heel stable they have with Big E and Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston. I think that they shouldn't do it. It seems like they really don't want to pull the plug on it. They really don't want to pull the trigger on it. They want to pull the plug instead. And because they're going back and forth so much like this, they probably shouldn't do it at all. Real quick question here on the WeAreWrestling.net room here. Is Funaki a trainer in the WWE now? Yes, he is. And we saw him come back on NXT to be in the stead of Hideo Itami as the Ascension continues to give him beatdowns. It was good to see SmackDown's number one announcer on NXT, just to see him back, period. But speaking of NXT, I think Kofi Kingston going back to NXT, I think Kofi Kingston staying in NXT would be absolutely perfect for him. I think that with Adrian Neville there and Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze and Tyson Kidd even, I think when you have people like that going toe-to-toe with, and even Itami, even Hideo Itami, people like that going toe-to-toe with Kofi Kingston and the athleticism that he has, and if he took that to NXT and stayed there and really kind of rebranded himself like Tyson Kidd did, oh my goodness, that would be absolutely perfect, perfect for Kofi Kingston. But unfortunately, WWE doesn't see that. NXT would be the best thing for Kofi Kingston right now, period. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Kofi Kingston needs NXT. There's so many things that can be done with Kofi Kingston and NXT. If they're having another NXT takeover here coming soon, and that'd be perfect for Kofi Kingston to go against Adrian Neville. Oh, it'd be absolutely perfect. Kofi Kingston as NXT champion. Yes, it's like being in the major leagues and baseball, and then going to a minor league team and winning the championship. But at least you can say that I'm becoming a better baseball player. At least I have something in my resume that is not more than a long string of losses. And I think it really worked for Kofi Kingston if he went to NXT.
It'd be perfect. I mean, he'd be right in his league. NXT is really exciting. I wish they'd have more NXT invasions like they did a few weeks back. It almost kind of like reminds me of the invasion of WCW stars, like when Benoit, Saturn, and Eddie Guerrero, and who else?
Dean Malenko, the Radicals.
All right, good.
2000, January 2000.
Yeah, that was great. That was an exciting time in wrestling, but it would be fun to see NXT do something similar to that, or some of the top guys, almost like when ECW invaded Raw at one time. I mean, invasions are fun. You like to see people just kind of pop up out of nowhere, and who's he, or what's he doing here? So they could keep it tight. But Kofi Kingston, let's get back to it. Yeah, he would be great with NXT, and I'd be 100% supporter of that, maybe. Even ROH, anything that he can get his hands on.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, we get Team Teddy versus Team Johnny, and Teddy Long wins, and Team Teddy wins, and Teddy Long is the best general manager in the history of SmackDown, and I totally agree. We actually did say Chris Benoit. We said his name. Responding to a comment here. Real quick, the last part of the night is the Flavor of the Week. Coming up soon.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week. Flavor
of the week this week is Hell in a Cell, No Way Out, 2000, The Game, Triple H against Mrs. Foley's baby boy, Mick Foley, in his Cactus Jack gimmick at that time. And it was a retirement match for Foley because on the WWE Network, he talked about how he was just banged up and he couldn't do it anymore. Michinoku Driver got a good job, got a response here. Michinoku Driver is indeed the correct answer. Great job. But at the time, Mick Foley was just saying, he was talking about how it's time for him to go. He was getting banged up. He could barely walk. He could barely, you know, wrestle. And it was time for him to hang it up. So They found it fitting to have a retirement match at No Way Out. At that point in time, 2000, it was the tie between Rock and Big Show, but Rock was the one who was the official winner of the Royal Rumble that year. So Rock had the title shot locked in, and of course we saw eventually that there was involvement with Triple H. Triple H became a part of the he was a champ at the time, but the Big Show became a part of the match anyways. The WrestleMania 2000 match, a lot of people did not like that match at WrestleMania 16. I personally didn't think it was a bad idea. You know, there was many people who were really involved in just really making that worthwhile. But unfortunately, you know, WrestleMania 16 main event is one of the main events that's that really gets the least amount of positive reviews. But Triple H and Mick Foley had a little mini feud going into WrestleMania, and you know they figured that they would have a Hell in a Cell match. No Way Out was the pay-per-view every year before WrestleMania. They had a match between each other, and it was a really, really, really good match. But unfortunately, Mick Foley was no longer. But he came back on WrestleMania to be a part of the four-way, but he still lost. But it was a very, very kind of heartfelt match they had. It was totally one of the best Hell in a Cell matches, and one of the most. It had a very, very good storyline with it too. And you know, Cactus Jack was forced to retire, but Mick Foley, you know, knowing how Mick Foley was, he still came back for one more match. They had the McMahons with all of them on WrestleMania 16. If I can recall, Vince was with The Rock, Steph was with Triple H, Linda was with Foley, and Shane was with Big Show. So it was kind of like a McMahon war. Triple H retained that at WrestleMania. But really memorable, very, very memorable Hell in a Cell match between Cactus Jack and Triple H. I was a big fan of it. I would encourage everybody to watch that that Hell in a Cell match again, because it was very, very good, very, very poignant. The story was written very well with it, and I think it was definitely one of the best.
It was a great, it was, and I haven't really thought about this match in a long time since you decided to make it the flavor of the week, which you did a great job tonight. You hit the nail on the head. It was almost like, yeah, it was Mick Foley's came out as Cactus Jack, a respectable character, came out in his flannel and his black tights. The Hell in the Cell. I remember when he actually fell through the roof of the Hell in the Cell. They're trying to mimic what had happened with him and Undertaker a couple years prior to that, when Mick Foley, it wasn't planned for him to go through that, and he actually knocked him out for a bit. But this one was actually planned, so yeah. But they pulled out none of the stuff. I mean, they had, I remember he had a 2x4 with barbed wire. They set something on fire, I believe.
Flaming barbed wire.
Flaming barbed wire, and they had thumbtacks. I mean, they had everything, and they pulled out all the stops. It was a classic Hell in a Cell match. Probably won't see a classic Hell in a Cell match in the next coming weeks at Hell in a Cell. But it was one for the books. It really was, and it's great to really reflect on that, because, again, I hadn't thought about that match forever, but I remember I did watch it on pay-per-view back in the day, and I was just blown away. It was very emotional and heartfelt because, you know, this is Mick Foley's last match. It was at the time, at least. And he lost, but, I mean, he put up a heck of a fight, and that guy's full of fight. And he always has been, really what he was. And Triple H was in his prime at the time, so I mean, both of them benefit huge from this match. Trying to develop what their characters were and what they are, so. Kudos to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting comment here. No Undertaker at WrestleMania 16. That's absolutely right. The We Are Wrestling forum here. They're I'm looking at Twitter and the Crave Wrestling page, and also We Are Wrestling. We Are Wrestling is we got some comments here talking about not a big fan of WrestleMania 16 because of the Undertaker. People agreeing. Because, you know, of The Undertaker and people not liking the Cactus Jack character in the WWE, interestingly enough. And I definitely think the Cactus Jack character in the WWE was not as meaningful as the Cactus Jack character in the WCW that had really good feuds with Sting and had some good matches with Vader and was tag team champions with who? You remember?
Vader was tag team champions with
Cactus Jack was tag team champions with who? In the WCW.
Crap, you asked me too early.
Okay, anybody does anybody know from Twitter or live stream or Crave Wrestling Facebook, let us know. Cactus Jack was tag team champions with who?
Charlie.
Yeah, well, Chainsaw Charlie, that was in the WWE, of course. But I'm talking about, I'm talking about WCW.
I can't remember. I'm thinking. I read his book, for crying out loud.
Yep. I will give you a I don't think I'll give you a hint. I think we'll allow the wonderful people and the Pancakes and Power Slams listeners to answer that question as we close. I'll just sit here for a moment and see who has the right answer. Yes, absolutely. Kevin Sullivan. Great job. Fantastic. Good job. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan is the games master. Kevin Sullivan, also the leader of a very zany faction back in the early 80s. So very, very, very interesting. Kevin Sullivan was a very, very interesting, zany character. But Kevin Sullivan, I'm surprised that he's not in the WWE Hall of Fame. So all the other people who were in the WWE Hall of Fame, Kevin Sullivan, out of anyone, I believe from all he's done in the pro wrestling world, the 40 years he's been wrestling, over 40 years ago. So yeah, I mean he with the Purple Haze group and all his contributions in his day, it'd be absolutely amazing. Of course, the Dungeon of Doom when he was the Taskmaster. Fantastic show tonight. Thank you all for continuing to support Crave Wrestling. I had a lot of fun tonight. Thank you so much for the Crave Wrestling fans. Thank you so much. Shout out to We Are Wrestling live stream. This will be every week. And check out some reports and some articles that I'll be doing more with WeAreWrestling.net. Of course, Wrestling.com. I've been with wrestling for nearly 2 years now and treating me right. And of course, Bleacher Report, I've been with them the longest as a feature columnist there. And just fun. I love writing about professional wrestling, as you see, I write for a bunch of different websites. So thank you so much. Thank you so much. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. Follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter and Facebook. Until next week, thank you so much. Have a great night. God bless. Goodbye.